I'm going to take a yes. Yeah, apologies for the technical issues, and I'm very sorry that I can't be there with you in person due to a kind of crazy amount of obligations I've had following various translations of Afropean. But it's great to be here. It was great to visit Freiburg to help to launch some of the work we're trying to do with Afropean and with Mohamed Marusa and John Okonfro, who's a bit of a hero of mine. I'm going to today just read a short passage from my book that I think might chime partly with some of the discussions that we'll be having today. I mean, partly because it's all about Frantz Fanon's experience on the ground, but also because of this notion of the future. And I think in order to know where we're going, we need to understand where we're from. And if we're going to discover this mission, we have to search for it. We have to peel back layers of history. And for me, those layers were found in the landscapes of Europe. In terms of the issues that Black people are facing here, I want to go out and travel and visit many places around Europe and allow space for the counterintuitive. So for instance, I'd read all of Frantz Fanon's output, but I found something about Fanon in Toulon that I didn't really know much about, and it opened up a big discussion for me. So I'm going to read from this passage. This passage in Toulon really is part of a wider group of essays as I get to the south of Europe that begins in Italy and then goes all the way along the French Riviera and tells the story of a kind of, I would say, a Black psychic geography. It begins with Joseph Mobutu's villa in Rock Room Cap Martin, which seems to tell a story of Belgian colonialism on the one hand, because King Leopold II owned a villa just moments away, but also some of that kind of that failed optimism of African independence that led to a dictator really owning a massive villa in the south of France while his country crumbled. I go further along and tell the story of James Baldwin, who lived in St. Paul de Vence, Claude McKay, Josephine Baker.
So we're going to have a short discussion with Johnny before he pens off from Zoom. And Johnny, I have two questions for you. I was just wondering, when was the moment that you, of course there are many experiences that we make as Black people living in Europe and so on, even as European Africans. I would like to know, like, when was that point when you decided that you wanted to enter into that research, into writing that book? Like, was there something that moved you? I mean, what was a tipping point?
I would say it was the 2008 financial crisis, when people started to look for scapegoats for why they had less money. And of course, multiculturalism in Europe is in place because Europe had been around the world colonizing because of these imperial projects. And so multiculturalism is in Europe because of Europe was over there, right? And then what happens is it's the same in this kind of neo-colonial world that we live in now of neoliberal capitalism, is that there are these centers of power that are a hangover from the old centers of power. It's all the same places, really. There are these centers of power where people need to come to get a living that are feeding off the rest of the world. So multiculturalism is a symptom of, in some ways, colonialism on the one hand and neoliberal capitalism on the other. And when capitalism started failing, Black people were being attacked. The symptom, rather than the actual root cause, was being attacked. And that became a real problem for me in my personal life. All of the things that held me together previously were suddenly contested. Angela Merkel, Putin, David Cameron, all around this time, start to talk about multiculturalism that was failing. We used the scapegoats. And so I needed to try and reconfigure a kind of multiculturalism 2.0, and work out what the truth was and where I fit into this grand scheme of Europe.
Awesome.
Johnny, this is Dr. Kelly, Natasha Kelly. I have a question concerning the term Afropean. I would be really interesting to know how it comes about and how you differentiate this from Black European, for example, from African European. Emily just now mentioned European Africans, and the list goes on. I'm talking from the perspective of a Black German right now also. Thank you.
Thank you, Natasha. It's an important question, and we should always question where these terms originate. This term kind of emerges out of popular culture. It was coined the first time that I know of it appearing, and I'm pretty sure it is the first time it appeared, was when David Byrne from a band called The Talking Heads was touring Europe, and he was astonished to see a Europe that wasn't being exported to the outside world. I still get this with my cousins who are in America. It's never a surprise for somebody to go to America and see Black people, because for all the issues in America at the moment, Black people are woven into the cultural mythology of Europe, perhaps because of the civil rights movement. It's sort of different in Europe. When my cousins come over to Europe, they're astonished to see Black people in France or Belgium or the Netherlands, you know, or Germany. So Black people are very often woven out of the kind of national myth making here in Europe. And that was the case for when David Byrne was traveling Europe. He was shocked, he was surprised at what he saw. During this trip, he discovered a band, the work of a band called Zap Mama, Belgian Congolese, a group led by Marie Dom. And he wanted to sign them immediately, because within Marie Dom's music was almost the soundtrack of this other Europe that never gets, that rarely gets spoken about. And so together they thought, well, what can we call this music? How can we eloquently describe this fusion of sounds and cultures that is inherent in this music? And together they came up with this term, Afropean. Now for me, it was a very optimistic notion when I first heard it. Here was a word that beautiful, successful Black Europeans were using to effortlessly and elegantly articulate their multiple allegiances. But when I tried to apply that not only to the lived experience of most Black people in Europe, but also to my own experience, which wasn't as glamorous as that, the term fell apart, and I had to try and reconfigure it and work out what it might mean for Black people when, you know, stylists and fashion designers and musicians aren't necessarily involved. What about everyday ordinary people? What could Afropean mean then? And in the end of the book, I describe it, even though it had fallen apart into a million pieces, into all these different fragments, I placed it back together to create a kind of mosaic of Black experience in Europe. An experience that removes the hyphen, that is whole and unhyphenated, and plays in the complicated blur of identity. And I call it a sullied utopia. It's a place, it's a dreaming space, it's a place, an imaginative geography where we can project ideas that of togetherness, or at least insist upon the intrinsic Europeanness of Black people living in Europe right now, and also the intrinsic Africanness of Europe, because of how Europe has traditionally empowered itself by using African resources and labour. So in the end, Afropean, it's not something that I walk around telling people I'm Afropean. It's a dreaming space, it's a portal, it's a suggestion into a lived experience that finds binaries too reductive.
Thank you very much. This is a moment for maybe a question from the audience. Does anyone want to ask a question to Johnny before he... Yes, please. We have a microphone for them. Yes, come. Johnny cannot see you, so you can just speak from there.
Okay. Thank you very much. My name is Manuela Wacker. I'm based here in Freiburg in sociology. And one of the things that I talk to my students about when we discuss Europe is how what you just described as how Europe has been built on African resources and labor, and how that project has been institutionalized as Eurafrica. after World War II, and for a while it was called that, and it was meant to build what then became the European Union on the basis of African resources and labor. Would you say that the term Afro-European would be kind of the opposite and at the same time of a utopia of the dystopia that was your Africa? Is such an opposition even important, or is it a coincidence that it sounds like the mirror image, so Afro-European versus your Africa? Thank you.
I mean, yeah, it's your Africa kind of inverted, and actually Afro-European places the Africa part first, which is key. You know, I think that term really emerges out of a kind of colonial state of play, and I think Afro-European emerges out of a post-colonial moment. So, in some ways, yes, I think it's a complete, it's by chance that these terms are actually mirrored, and I do want Afro-European to function in a very different way to this notion of your Africa. In another way, I like the fact that it's kind of trying to reverse some of those old ideas, and I realise that the term Afro-European is not always popular with everybody because of its place. You know, with Afro-European, you can never act like colonialism didn't exist, and in some ways, you're trying to find a way to move forward. You're trying to pick up all these different ingredients and find a way to reconcile and reconstruct. And so, for me, first and foremost, though, Afro-European must work outside of institutions, which is why I'm very loath with the work that we do at Afro-European, and even with my own book, which was written before any kind of publishing deal, there is something necessarily subaltern, in my opinion, about Afro-European, that there needs to be something that acts from the fringes and that can't be too institutionalized. I don't think Afro-European would work well as part of an institution. I think it needs to be organic, and it needs to be movable and work in the opposite way to ethnic absolutism, which is to insist on this complicated blur I keep talking about. And it must also work, you know, I do some work with the European Union and stuff every now and again, but for me, this term needs to address, needs to work from the street up rather than from the institution down.
Johnny, I have a question. Would you say Afro-European exists as well as an educational space outside of educational structures, a space of dialogue?
Yeah, I mean, Jasmine, thank you. It's great to speak with you again. But it's a good question, and I think that it was important for me. I mean, I'm guided by so many great scholars and academics that, you know, especially out of the kind of Birmingham School here in the United Kingdom. But having said that, you know, I sometimes find academic language very standoffish, and academics sometimes guilty of just trying to impress each other without trying to find ways in for working class people and using language that a broader public can understand. So yeah, I think very much I describe Afro-European, or what I found in Afro-Europea in my book Afro-European, as a kind of bricolage of blackness. I myself am something of an autodidact. I operate outside of these spaces. And for me, the Afro-European needs to work for people outside of those spaces. But not exclusively, it needs to kind of create a bridge. And I think if Afro-European does anything, it needs to be something that builds bridges across cultures, but also across members of the black community, across class and across geography. And one of the good things about writing a book is that it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And through the narrative architecture of the book, I can allow black communities and academics and street sweepers, and I can allow them to kind of talk to each other through the narrative of the book and show the similarities of the black experience and also the difference. So I was trying to create a kind of dialogue through the structure of the book.
Johnny, We thank you so much for your presence and for a very rich discussion. And thank you so much also for participating in the conversation. So we'd like to wish you a nice evening, and I hope that you can still join us. I mean, just listen in into what we're saying. Perhaps we'll have an opportunity at another time to have a conversation live with each other. So thank you so much. Have a good evening.